Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Come on in. Welcome to Erie House, Oldie Timey Radio. Everybody's welcome. I'm a host of sorts, one of them. Dale Kay from Spook Show, and I'm here along with...
The tiny microphone of Dave Bakley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. As Dale didn't tell me till 5 days before we're all there, I'm Kay. Thank you.
Sorry about that. I should be executed. And perhaps they will
Maybe
be.
You should.
And you folks get to decide. Will it be firing squad? Lethal injection? That might be fun. No, jeez, no, it wouldn't. Should I be hung? Should I be... I don't know. What's left? We did firing squad. Guillotine? Or guillotine, if you will. I don't know. Well, what would you pick for your method of execution?
Old age.
There you go. Very good. Old age. That's the preferred method. Mine is being shot to death by a jealous, by a 21-year-old's jealous husband. Yeah, no.
Okay, if you're going to go that far, I'm going to go the way that Nelson Rockefeller did. Yeah, that's true.
Oh, I know. How did he bite the bullet?
Well, he was in bed with his mistress when he passed.
Ah, little heart attack thingy.
Yeah.
What a way to go. Oh my. Couldn't take it.
Yeah.
Guess money isn't everything now, is it?
Well, there isn't any more for him.
And if you don't have enough money, sometimes you end up walking the green mile or the last mile. Or the green mile. As some people do some pretty heinous things in the world, they are sentenced to death by a court of law. Not practiced much these days, but used to be rather popular form of entertainment.
Of entertainment. You know, they were. I mean, hangings were, they were public and people showed up to see people dancing at the end of the rope. Go back to the French Revolution, where they took people to the guillotine. And masses of people showed up for the executions. Witch burnings, when they did have them, not too many of them, but when they did, people showed up.
How could you miss it?
I'm thinking of a firing squad. The last one in this country that I know of was Gary Gilmore.
I remember that.
Yeah.
That was somewhere in the West. He was in one of the Western states, and they put him down on television, if I'm not mistaken. Was his televised?
Yes. Well, I don't. It was closed circuit, maybe.
Okay. If you pay your cable bill, you can see live a guy getting shot to death. How nice. How much fun is that? No, it's an unfortunate thing that's, I don't know, people have a wide range of opinions on whether it should be done or not, but it makes for great entertainment. And we've got three entertaining tales about execution for you tonight. We got Old Man, the witch from The Witch's Tale. We've got Lights Out and an episode of Suspense, and hopefully we have Dave back.
Yeah, I had to resort to my phone. I didn't realize that my level was going off that crazy on me. So
yeah, you sound much better, Dave.
Yeah, I'm using an old-fashioned phone, a smartphone. I don't like that.
I know. But you're a trooper. I appreciate you getting back here in there, because I'd be going nuts trying to do this by myself. It's bad enough we're missing our dear brother Gar, who's not feeling well.
Yeah, hopefully he'll be feeling better for his show tomorrow night, the Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul.
Yep.
But a new word on that with his new Twitch account, and as long as he can drag himself to the computer, even if he can't do the show, he can do a Horrible Horror rerun for everybody, and everybody Ooh. Can be there live and chatting while his show goes on. So
there you go. Nifty little outlet, but we hope he gets well soon. Meanwhile, Dave and I have to face our final verdict with these three tales tonight.
We do, and one almost execution, one execution, actually kind of two executions, and then one multiple executions.
Oh, that's always fun. The more the merrier.
From almost one to a few to many, many, many.
Mm. Gosh, I can't wait.
So if you want to work your way up, if that's how you want to do, work your way up in executions?
Sure, why not?
Well, in that case, we would start with suspense tonight.
Ooh. Good, we haven't had suspense on for a while. This one's entitled...
No, it's been a week or two.
Yeah. That's a long time. There's a lot of them.
There
a lot of long way to go for suspense. And this one's entitled A Matter of Execution.
And it is from August 30th, 1959.
And now, A Matter of Execution. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. Burton.
I swear, Warden, I thought you'd never get it.
Burton. Burton, your lawyer just phoned from the governor's mansion.
All right, he phoned. What did he say?
I'm sorry, Burton.
So we're lost. Really lost. 3 hours, I'm going to die. I'm going to die for a crime I never committed.
Burton, please.
I'm afraid, Warden. Warden, I'm so afraid. I've been living this nightmare for a year. The accusation, the arrest, the trial, the conviction. I couldn't believe any of it was happening. I kept telling myself that sooner or later they'd find out the truth.
Burton, believe me.
First I was confused, then I was horrified. Then I think I was numb. Then I was hopeful. I told myself that such a mistake couldn't happen. You understand, I had to tell myself that. So I was hopeful. Now, Warden, I'm just plain scared. Warden, I'm scared.
Clay.
Evening, Bobby. What can I do for you?
Quart of ice cream, Mr. Clay. Next.
I know. Vanilla for your mother, chocolate for your father, and...
strawberry for me.
Right. See, I remember. And charge it to your mother's account?
Yes, sir.
It's warm this evening. You mind opening the front door, Bobby? A little fresh air be nice right now.
Sure, Mr. Clay. Air smells nice, Mr. Clay.
It does at that. Sprinkler just came through the street and wet it down. Yeah, now just let me enter the charge, Bobby. Yeah, there. And here's your quart of mixed. And no, stay where you are, Bobby. I'll bring it to you. Just as soon feel the fresh air on my face. Here you are.
Thanks, Mr. Clay.
You're welcome.
Street looks pretty, doesn't it? Mm. All wet and shiny. Mr. Clay, look at that car. It's flooding all over the street.
It's out of control.
It's heading right to the lamppost! Clay! Look! The man lying there in the street!
Well, the driver. He was thrown right out of the car. Come on!
Look, Mr. Mr. Clay. He's so still. Is he dead?
I don't know. If he isn't, it's a miracle. Well, now you wait here, Bobby. I'll phone in a report. Get help and an ambulance.
But Mr. Clay, what'll I do? There's no one else here. I don't know what... Mister, can you hear me? Please, mister, open your eyes.
Oh.
You did. You opened them.
What happened?
You skidded. Hit the lamppost.
Oh. Kid, I'm hurt. I'm hurt bad.
Yes, sir, but help's coming. Mr. Clay wants to phone for the ambulance.
Listen, are we all alone?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I'm a weak kid. Oh, I'm awful weak. I'm afraid I can't make it. I'm gonna die.
No, mister, no.
Hey, kid, come here. Closer. I gotta tell somebody before it's too late. Oh, I mustn't black out before. Come here closer.
Yes, sir.
Listen, you tell the police. I confess. Listen, there's a man named Burton. He's gonna hang tonight. He's innocent. Remember this, kid? Burton's innocent. I killed that pawnbroker. Tell him. There's a gun I used. It's hidden. It's hidden under the back seat of my car.
Mister! Mister!
Ambulance will be here any minute.
Mr. Clay, listen. A terrible thing is happening. Terrible. And there isn't much time.
Huh?
An innocent man is going to die. An innocent man, Mr. Clay. He didn't do anything.
I'm afraid you're right, Bobby. Poor man couldn't know the street was wet.
No, sir, that isn't what I meant. Another man, an innocent man.
Now, Bobby, this man was alone and the car in the street was absolutely empty. Now, you're confused, son.
Mr. Clay, let me tell you what happened.
You don't have to tell me, Bobby. I saw the whole thing with my own eyes. Please, I'm too upset to... There's the police car. Bobby, I really think you should go home. This is no place for...
But, Mr. Clay, this is important. You've got to listen.
Way, officer, over here. I saw the whole thing. You skidded. Yeah, dear, terrible thing, officer, terrible.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Anyone else hurt?
Nobody else involved, driving alone. You hit the wet street, you see, you skidded and crashed right into that...
Officer, I got to tell you something. A man's going to die for nothing.
All right, take it easy, son. We'll do all we can for him. All right, everybody. Everybody stand way back, please. Make plenty of room. You too, Sonny.
But I got to tell you something. You got to listen.
Not now, Sonny. Step way back, kid. In fact, go home. All right, clear the way. Let that ambulance through. You, kid, I said go home. Right here, Doc. Right here. Thrown right out of the car when he hit the lamppost. All right, Mr. Clay, you want to give me the details?
Of course. All took just a couple of seconds. I was standing right there in the doorway of my store.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, this car turns in from Maple Street, going a little fast, maybe.
Please, Mr. Clay, let me tell the officer what I know.
Now, how fast did you say, Mr. Clay?
Oh, 40, 45, maybe. The minute I saw him start into the skid, I said to myself...
Honest, if the man doesn't wake up, nobody will know.
Are you sure, Mr. Clay, there was no other car in the street?
Positive.
Officer, Mr. Clay.
Unconscious when you got to him, I guess.
Out cold. I thought he was dead.
Close to dead right now. Well, I guess that's about it.
Officer!
All right. Get back, everybody. Make room as the ambulance get out. Hey, call in and tell him to hurry that tow car.
Please, listen. I got to tell you something before it's too late.
Son, I told you we're busy. Haven't got time for kids now. Be a good boy. Go home.
In a moment, we continue with the second act of Suspense. For shoplifting, the sentence of the court shall be one ear sliced off and 20 lashes with a cat of nine tails to be laid on in the public square at high noon. Now, that sentence was never carried because we don't punish shoplifting in that extravagant manner. But in San Francisco in 1848 and early 1849, before the founding of real law and order in the gold camps, many a man lost an ear or both ears
for lifting a partner's poke of Vader. But when the basic laws of the United States came in, when California was admitted into the Union, the Seventh Amendment of the Constitution came in with it. This Seventh Amendment reads in part, "Nor shall there be cruel and unusual punishments inflicted." And so with order came the reign of the Bill of Rights. 10 amendments that will stand tall in the minds of men for all time. The lash, the spiked interior of the Iron Maiden, the bone-breaking wheel, the red-hot poker, and the carving knife. These are no longer the punishment of criminals in the United States. But always remember, it didn't just happen that way. Far-sighted men, humane men, our first Congress made it that way, showed the way with our Bill of Rights and the Eighth Amendment. It is one of our freedoms.
That you, Bobby?
Yes, Mama. Mama, I gotta tell you something.
You certainly do, like why you're so late. You know how long you've been. I was just beginning to worry.
Yes, Mama, but I couldn't help it this time. Listen, Mama, something happened.
You realize it's almost 8 o'clock?
Yes, Mama, that's just it. It'll be too late.
Bobby, the ice cream is leaking right through the carton. Oh, Bobby, for goodness sakes, here, give me that.
Yes, Mama, but please, let me tell you what happened. You don't know what
ice cream's all melting. I'll have to get it into the freezer. Really, Bobby, sometime.
Mama, there was an accident.
An accident? You're hurt. Darling, what happened to you?
Nothing, Mama. The accident didn't happen to me. To someone else. A man. It's what I was trying to tell you.
Bobby, really, you scared the wits out of me.
I'm sorry. But you gotta let me tell you this. You gotta. Now, it's important.
I guess if you don't tell this wonderful story, you'll burst. And we don't want that, do we? Well, what is it you're trying to say?
Gee, I thought I'd never get to tell you. You see, there's a man. He's not bad. He didn't do what they think he did. The other man...
Now, wait a minute, darling. Slow down. What man are you talking about? Why was he bad?
He wasn't bad. That's just it. He didn't kill anybody. Just think he did. It was the other man.
Just a minute, darling. That must be your Aunt Louise. I've been expecting her call. Excuse me. Hello?
Mama, please. You said you'd listen.
Louise? Yes, well, did you look it up?
Mama, let me tell it to you from the beginning. Then maybe you'll understand.
Just a second, Louise. Bobby, dear, don't interrupt Mother when she's on the phone. Hello, Louise. Yes, just Bobby. Naturally. Right now, while I'm on the phone. Isn't that the truth? Of course, every time. Well, why should your youngster be any different?
Mama, please ask Aunt Louise to hold the wire. You said you'd listen.
Well, what's that, Louise? One second. Bobby, if you keep talking while I'm on the phone, I can't hear Aunt Louise. Hello, dear. Just Bobby again. Now, what were you saying?
Mama!
Hush, dear. Yes? Oh, you have the recipe right in front of you. Well, then start with the part after 2 heaping cups of sugar. I'm sure I'm right up there.
A man will die, Mama. He'll die.
Later, Bobby. Yes? Oh, yes. Now I see where I made my mistake.
Please, Mama, please. It'll all be my fault.
I've got it now, Louise. Thanks, dear. How's Walter? Oh, no, not again. Well, it's probably just the weather.
Mama!
Give me my love. Bye, dear. Now, Bobby, what was it you were telling me?
About the accident. The man was hurt so bad. He's dying, I think. And he killed somebody. But there's another man, and they'll hang the other man. But it's a mistake. He didn't kill anybody. He's innocent. But they don't know that. You haven't really...
Believe it or not, I'm home.
There's Daddy. Hi, Roy. Now, Bobby, I really have to get dinner ready, and I'm sure that if the man didn't kill anyone, nobody will want to hang him. Anyway, if it was all an accident...
Wait, you didn't hear the whole thing.
Well, not now, dear. Tell me your story later.
But, Mama, there's no time.
Of course there is. It just seems that way to a boy of 11. But really, whatever it is you want to tell me, I'm sure there's plenty of time.
In just a moment, we continue with the third act of Suspense.
Have you ever thought of being a leader in your home community? For a minute, let's pretend that you are. It's an average community in most respects, neither rich nor poor, and with most of the problems that other communities have. But there is one problem that's a little different. Near the outskirts of town, there is a slum area, and you and the other leaders have long believed it should be cleared up. But the problem is not simple.
My house.
Because the people who live in this disease-ridden slum area have no wish to become part of the community. They remain by themselves. They will not mix. They will not do business. And they will not listen to advice. What would you do? Tell the other leaders of the community that what these people do is their own business and how they live and die makes no difference to you? Or would you call in a group of experts who are experienced in clearing up such situations? Of course you would. Because you know that poverty anywhere is a danger to prosperity everywhere. You would ask the experts to help the people pull themselves up by their bootstraps, up to a better way of life. Throughout the world, this is what the International Labor Organization is doing. It is an agency of the United Nations, which is man's best hope for higher social standards, peace, and justice.
And the American way, apple pie and mom.
You forgot slum. Yep, American way, apple pie and slums.
No, oh, I thought it was mom. Okay.
Oh, oh.
Slums.
Oh, that's what
slums it
about.
Is. And we thank you for we thank you for slumming with us here on Erie House Radio. Welcome, CW, Fogsbane, as we are killing ourselves to bring you these episodes today.
You've been working all week on these, haven't you?
Some of it.
Just dying to get them out, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Just making sure. Just making sure. Interesting tale going on here. A guy that didn't commit, you know, and how many times, and you know, as, I guess that's one of the big reasons against people are saying against the death penalty. There are people there that shouldn't have been there, and here's a guy that I guess could almost prove that he didn't do it, except that he can't because it's in the hands of. Sounds like what, about an 11-year-old boy?
Yeah, a very young kid, and who's having difficulty getting anyone to pay attention to
that's
him.
That's right. I mean, geez, you know, if you don't want somebody to listen to you, you should get married.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, you're dealing with professionals there.
But, yeah, I mean, and it makes you wonder how far he goes before somebody might or might not listen to him, or will it be too late? We do not know.
Not yet, we don't, but we will shortly as we will wrap up this episode of Suspense. So this little kid actor is pretty good.
Yeah, actually, he is. And some of the little kid actors aren't little kid actors. One is
right.
Little John Nichols, who's just a short guy who was, you know, also a Speedy for Alka-Seltzer. This one actually sounds like he may actually be either a kid or a woman with a higher voice there. And that's what happened a lot of times, too, is a lot of young boys were played by women on the radio,
yep.
Those that had the versatility, and many of them did, have the ability to do multiple voices, especially going up in range, sounding like babies and children and things like that.
Yeah. Yep. And they bring a lot of rich characters to these terrific tales.
Yep.
Like the,
absolutely.
Like this one.
Yes. And this tale comes to us just a year before we were around, Dale. So it's very... you know, it's a different kind of story than what you would hear from Suspense in the 1940s.
Yeah, they kind of changed as time went by, but still a quality show, a good episode, a matter of execution. Let's find out if this little kid can get anybody to pay attention and stop the execution. We'll be back after this.
Consider.
What?
reconsider what we discussed. Don't you see the chaplain now?
Huh?
The chaplain, Burton. He wants to stay with you.
Oh, yes, I remember. No, Warden, thank you very much, but tell him I'd rather not.
It would help. It would make it easier. Please believe me.
It wouldn't help. Not now, not anymore. I don't want words of comfort. I don't want words.
He wants you to know that he won't preach to you. He just wants you to have a friend with you now. And he is your friend, Burton, I know.
Tell him I understand how he feels. But I just can't cooperate. Nobody can help me now.
Well, son, no hello for your dad?
Hello, Daddy. Daddy, I gotta tell you something. Can I?
Of course you can. Just give me a chance to wash up. Hey, you could stand to wash yourself. Come on upstairs.
And you listen?
Sure.
Well, first, Daddy, I better tell you about this man in jail.
Jail, huh? What do you know about that?
He's innocent. And tonight...
Yeah, hey, what's for dinner?
Chicken. If you don't hurry, bird chicken.
We'll hurry. Come on, Bobby.
Daddy, please, listen. It's important.
Sure, sure. Now, into the bathroom with you. Quick.
Somebody just tell what really happened.
Wash your face, Bobby.
Daddy, it's getting late. The other man told me to...
Wash your face. And here's your towel.
You see, there was an accident.
Now, let me do the thing, Bobby. I have to wash, too, you know.
And the man was hurt. And he'll die before anyone knows that the man in jail didn't kill anyone. He did. The other one. Understand what I mean, Daddy?
Bobby, the towel. Quick, I got soap in my eyes. Yeah, thanks.
Oh, you've got to tell him in time, or the man will be...
Did Mama get my gray suit from the cleaners?
You didn't listen. I told you it was important.
Bobby, where are you going?
Police Department, First Precinct, Front Desk, Officer Moody. Yes, ma'am. Oh, no, ma'am. Your daughter's over 21? No, ma'am. Afraid there's nothing we can do about that. No, I understand, ma'am. You feel he has shifty look. But if she wants to marry him... Oh, no, I understand, ma'am. Shifty around the eyes. Oh, sure. Well, maybe you'll get used to it. Oh, no. Never hesitate to call us. Oh, brother.
Hey, officer...
Now a kid. This is my day.
Officer, I gotta tell you something. You gotta listen. Officer, you're the same one. The one at the accident on Laurel Avenue.
Huh? Oh, yeah, the kid. Yeah. Are you haunting me?
You wouldn't listen before. Please, you gotta listen now. You're hanging Burton tonight, and he's innocent.
Lieutenant Fire, big flash for you.
Yes?
This little boy feels you were wrong on the Burton case. Says he's innocent.
Very funny.
Lieutenant Byer made the Burton arrest, kid.
Then I gotta tell him.
Look, kid, give us a chance to do our job. Arrest people who did something bad. Now go on home now.
How do you like that? Six crackpots in here today convinced Burton is innocent. Same six we get every time on the day of an execution. But a kid is a new experience.
It's that kid. He threw a stone through the window.
Get him back in here.
I did it. You can arrest me. And then will you listen to me?
Of all the...
Do you realize what you just did? You don't look like the kind of boy who does a thing like that. What's the idea?
Well, I have to make you listen.
Yes, I guess you did. All right, I'll listen. But this better be good. Hospital says he's still breathing, in a coma. Get me a car. I'll keep the kid with me.
You're taking this seriously?
I have to. This kid described what certainly sounds like a deathbed confession. I've got to check it out. It's 9:30. Burton hangs at 10. And I arrested Burton.
And if the guy dies before he can speak again...
Then so will Burton. Get that car.
He's still unconscious, isn't he?
Yes.
Will he die?
Any minute.
Can he wake up for a little?
You see what the doctor and nurse are doing? They're trying.
But he already told me, and I told you.
Look, you're sure you told me everything he said, that he knew he was dying, that he confessed, that he killed the pawnbroker, that Burton is innocent. Is that everything?
Yes, sir. That's everything.
Hello, kid.
He woke up.
I'm Lieutenant Beyer of Homicide. Do you have a statement to make to the police?
You brought them, kid.
Yes, sir.
We've very little time. You realize you're dying.
Yes.
The statement you make to me has the solemn force of a deathbed confession, so help you God.
Yes. Yes. I killed that pawnbroker. Burton is innocent. So help me God.
And the gun? The gun? What did you do with... No use, he's dead. I should have the proof. I should have the proof.
What proof? He told you.
The gun, the missing gun. It would guarantee the thing.
Well, I know where that is.
What?
That's the other thing he told me. The gun is under the back seat of his car.
Hello. Hello, operator. This is Lieutenant Beyer of the city police. This call is official. Get me Maple 1000. Urgent. Hello. This is Beyer, Homicide. Put me through to the wrecked car. Found fast.
What time is it?
10 minutes to 10. Hello. Hello. Hello, Mac. What's holding us up? Look, I said fast. Emergency. So ring on another line. Only one. Then break in. You can do that. I don't care if he's talking. I don't care who he's talking to. I don't care if he's talking to Eisenhower. Break in. Big deal. Walsh is talking. Come on, McGillicuddy. Tell Walsh it's me. This is a must. Hello. Hello, Walsh, Beyer. Never mind that. This is important and immediate. Right. You have a wreck towed in from a Laurel Avenue crash a couple of hours ago, right? You're looking right at it now. Look under the back seat and tell me what you find, and hurry. Keep your fingers crossed, kid. Hello, you did? What caliber? 38. Perfect. Hello, operator. This is Lieutenant Beyer again. Official call again. Immediately, matter of life or death. Get me the state penitentiary. Bobby, for the third time, will you forget about the window? I told you, the window is on me.
Thanks.
Forget it, you're the department's guest. And stop thanking me for driving you home. A detective your age can't be walking alone at night.
Yes, sir.
You know, for a boy of 11, you did quite a job tonight. You saved a man's life. You heard me talk to the warden. You won. With 6 minutes to spare. It was pretty wonderful. So why do you still look worried?
Because I never stayed out so late before. And I ran out of the house without dinner. What do my mother and father say?
Now, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if they were very proud when you tell them the whole story.
But when I tell them, will they listen?
Tonight's story were Peter Laser, Ginger Jones, Santos Ortega, Martin Blaine, Bernard Grant, Nat Polan, Sam Raskin, Bill Adams, and Harold Huber. Listen again next week when we return with another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. Suspense has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Never-ending outro of suspense.
Take time.
Sounds more like a march, doesn't it?
It does, a little bit. Not quite just a suspenseful march.
Yeah.
And again, that's near the end of their run from 1959, A Matter of Execution. Good work, kid. You stopped them. Yep. You stopped the unnecessary execution. Good work.
Now, wait a minute. That kind of ruins our basis for tonight's show. But wait, there are plenty more executions coming tonight.
As many as we can fit into an hour and a half show. No, 2-hour show.
2-hour show tonight, yeah. Yep.
Holy cats, we're on for 2 hours. What the hell are we going to do?
extra features, I guess. I'm not sure. You know, one thing I did, something I read a long time ago, and I didn't bring the book home. I keep it at the station. I don't care. About the invention of the electric chair. As you may or may not know, basically it was pretty much Thomas Edison that really wanted the electric chair to be used, just to show how, because of course Thomas Edison was a direct current guy, you know, just your battery type thing, and George Westinghouse had the alternating current, which he felt was far more dangerous. He's right about that, but if it weren't for if that's the way that it went, we all have substations in our backyard, because that's about, you know, direct can only go just so far.
Yeah.
Edison
was a sort of a hero of mine for his ingenuity for a long time until I learned more about him. That electricity he was working on, he actually electrocuted an elephant to death, or tried to.
He and Westinghouse were trying to win lucrative electricity contracts. The critical marketing gave the general public's familiarity with the electricity was limited to lightning bolts. What happened next makes the cage match between Apple and Google seem like a game of gin rummy. Just as the two inventors were battling, a dentist in Buffalo named Alfred Southwick heard about a drunk man dying instantly after touching a generator, according to The Electric Chair and Unnatural American History by Craig Brandon. The commission in New York had been contemplating replacing hangings with electrocution. A similar shift would take place a century later in states such as Arkansas, which carried out back-to-back executions Monday, and then put another man to death on Friday, adopted lethal injections as the preferred method of capital punishment. Southwick thought that executing prisoners with electricity would be more humane than messy hangings. He tested the theory by electrocuting stray animals around town. Boo, hiss. On November 8, 1887, Southwick sent Edison a letter about his findings asking how to best electrocute humans. The Wizard of Menlo Park wrote back saying he abhorred the idea and would join heartily in an effort to abolish capital punishment, according to Brandon's book. Southwick, apparently very persistent dentist, wrote Edison again a month later. This time Edison had a different answer. The most suitable apparatus for this purpose is the class of dynamo electric machine, which employs intermittent currents, Edison wrote. The most effective of these are known as alternating machines, manufactured principally by George Westinghouse. It was Thomas Edison that actually kind of said, let's Westinghouse him. He's, again, trying to show how dangerous Westinghouse's electricity was. Edison's logic was twisted, barbaric, and possibly brilliant. If he could convince the world that Westinghouse's alternating current was a swift and efficient killer, his method would be seen as safer, increasing his market share. The electric chair's midwife was greed, Brandon wrote, the kind of pure, unadulterated greed for which the Gilded Age was famous. This episode led to New York adopting the electric chair as its tool of death. That's to make sure that Westinghouse's alternating current was chosen by the secretly funding another electricity engineer to quickly build the device. The first victim, William Kemmler, a drunk who killed his common-law wife with a hatchet, Westinghouse hired Kemmler to be the best attorney he could find, even taking the case to the Supreme Court, which declined to overturn his death sentence. on August 9th, 1860, before the sun rose, Kemmler woke up in his cell, put on a suit, and laced up a pair of polished shoes. The warden led him to the crowded room where an empty oak chair awaited him. "Gentlemen, I wish everyone all the good luck in the world," Kremler said, according to newspaper accounts. "I believe I'm going to a good place. The papers have been saying a lot of stuff that ain't so. That's all I have to say." The warden strapped Kemmler in, attaching electrodes to his head. "Goodbye, William," he said. He motioned for someone to flip the switch. His shoulders drew up, as they sometimes do in case of a man who is hanging, a coroner later wrote. 17 seconds later, two physicians determined that Kemmler was dead. The current was turned off. The room was silent. Then someone yelled, "Great God, he is alive!" Kemmler was breathing. His heart was beating. "Turn on the current," someone else shouted. 4 minutes later, Kemmler was really dead. His body shook several, or took several hours to cool off. Not only was he dead, he was tempted. Newspapers called him a poor wretch. Westinghouse was horrified. "I could have done a better job. Could have done a better job with an axe," he told reporters, according to several books on the death penalty. Edison was more optimistic. "The excitement," he said, "caused some bungling. I think that the next man is placed in chair to suffer penalty, that death will be accomplished instantly." Edison also offered some advice. "Better way to place his hands in jars of water," he said, "and let the current be turned on there."
Nice.
Now, that was not from the book, but that was from an article from the Washington Post.
Nice. Very nice.
So, there you go.
I like the story with a happy ending.
You want to make a happy ending, maybe you should have strapped it. No, you know, that's terrible. You know, it was supposed to be more humane than the hanging. Actually, the guillotine may have been the quickest way to go. I don't know.
I say throw a toaster into the bathtub with them.
Well, that does it too. Yeah, I saw that on Columbo. It worked out pretty good that way.
Oh, God. I'm a bad, bad man. With good, good stories. Where are we going next, Dave? What's our next method of execution?
Executions. The next one would be the witch's tail. We were talking about this a little bit before we went on the air about the witch's tail. How? Go ahead. You brought up the point, which is absolutely true.
She may well be the first modern era horror hostess and horror host in general. 1931, Dave reports, and even the Hermit came a little bit later. What, I think he said a year later, Dave, in 32.
He was 1930. I think it was like 1933, so that was like 2 years later. I can look that up, which I will, you know, in between here. But yeah, it's crazy that. How this is not, you know, people think of Raymond and Inner Sanctum as the father of horror hosting. Well, old Nancy would have been probably the mother or the grandmother of it then, as you so aptly stated.
Dave also edumacated me in the fact that this is the original Nan,
yep.
Who was roughly age 78 at the time of this broadcast,
yep.
Quite a while
yes.
ago, only about yep. 80, what, 7 years ago,
yeah.
1934. Do we have an exact date for Rockabye Baby?
We do not have an exact date. But, this is the stage actress Adeline Fritz, or Fitz, F-I-T-Z, hyphen Allen. And she was the original old Nancy. She was of 78 at this time, not 104 like she says she's going to be.
That's right. 78, 104, what's the difference? Here's Rockabye Baby from The Witch's Tale.
We've bring you The Witch's Tale, written and produced by Alonzo Dean Cole. The Witch's Tale.
It is our purpose in these programs to perform a double function. By providing thrilling entertainment and also by bringing you important information in a brief message. Tonight's message may save you or other members of your family needless suffering from distressing pain. As for the pains which you recognize as rheumatism or neuritis or discomfort in the kidneys and the back. Now, most of you know that for many years, wealthy people were sent to famous European mineral springs and came back reporting enthusiastically that the expense of the trip was well worthwhile. Those European mineral waters relieved them of the pains of rheumatism, neuritis, and kidney troubles, and renewed vital energy was reflected in their faces and in every step they took. Now, I've reminded you of this so that you will understand why Crucian salts relieves pains of rheumatism and similar ailments so quickly and effectively. You see, Crucian was developed to duplicate the therapeutic effects of those famous European springs. Crucian contains those elements in a balanced combination of 6 mineral health salts. Doctors know this remarkable Crucian formula, know that it is absolutely harmless and marvelously effective. That is why Crucian is prescribed by more doctors throughout the world than any other medicinal salts or crystals. If you are subject to rheumatism or neuritis or kindred ailment, let Crucian gently but surely rid you of the poisons which have secretly accumulated in your system. And you will be amazed at the result. For these poisons circulate through the bloodstream and set up an aggravated pain that gradually gets worse if it isn't properly relieved. Don't put up with it needlessly another day when your nearest drug counter has Crucian. That word Crucian, spelled K-R-U-S-C-H-E-N, has meant joy to millions of grateful people. In countless homes, it keeps happy folks free from acidity, free from acid-caused headaches, sour stomach, and flatulence, and free from the aches and pains of rheumatism, neuritis, and distressed kidneys. As your doctor will confirm, all these troubles can be related to each other. So tomorrow, join the millions who keep themselves feeling fit and looking fit due to Crucian. Learn for yourself what it means to always have that Crucian feeling. And now for our visit to old Nancy and her wise black cat.
Hannah and 5 year old I be today.
Yes, sir. Hannah and 5 year old.
We'll take them.
Yeah.
It's a real bedtime story we got for folks tonight. Everybody douse out them lights so we have it nice and dark. Our little tales is best listened to amongst the ghostly shadows. Now draw up to the fire and gaze into the embers. Gaze into them deep, and soon you'll be across the sea in England. There begins our yarn of Rockabye Baby. Rockabye Baby!
Mr. Melvin, you don't honestly believe what you just said.
Oh, yes, my dear fellow. There's a room in the east tower of this old mansion which is positively haunted.
Mrs. Beckett, he's just fooling, isn't he?
No, indeed, Mrs. Christie. I share Mr. Melvin's opinion that his tower room is queer.
So do I. I wouldn't enter the place off the sundown for £20,000.
Robert, I never heard of such a thing. 3 grown-up people believing in ghosts.
Well, everybody's entitled to their own opinions, honey, but I warn you, ladies and gentlemen, that my wife and I came from Missouri.
Missouri? You know, so many Americans say they come from that great state. It must be very popular.
But, George, I understood Mr. and Mrs. Christie to say their home was in, Oh, such a difficult name.
Robert and I were born in Kentucky, Mrs. Beckett.
It's only since you mentioned spooks that we've been from Missouri.
I don't understand.
I do. But whether you believe us or not, Mr. Christie, the fact remains that no one can pass a night in the room I speak of.
You mean to tell me that I couldn't stay there?
My dear fellow, you'd find it an utter impossibility.
Is that so? Well, say, now look
Robert,
here, I'm
you
just...
be still. Let Mr. Malvin tell us about the place. What's supposed to happen is so scary, Mr. Malvin.
Wait till we have another drink. To make the yarn seem better.
Yes, capital idea. I'll be the barmaid.
You better not take any more drinks.
Of course I'm having more.
But this will make you sick this evening.
Well, what if it does? I know how to handle my liquor, Susie.
When I hear you married couples quarrel, I truly appreciate my bachelorhood.
Oh, please don't think that Robert and I were quarreling, Mr. Malvin.
Oh, I should say not. Our little arguments never mean anything, do they, Rockabye Baby?
Rockabye Baby?
Now, that's just a little family secret.
Yep, one that goes way back. Way, way back, don't it, honey?
But now, Mr. Malvin, suppose you tell us what awful things happen in that haunted room of yours.
Yeah. Just what sort of a person is your family ghost?
Well, it's the uneasy spirit of an ancestor of mine. His portrait hangs here upon his wall.
That old gentleman in the red suit?
Robert, he looks just like pictures of Sir Walter Raleigh.
He lived in the same age. And like Raleigh, he died by the headsman's axe.
His head was chopped off?
Yes, he went to the block for murder. I blush to admit that my ancestor was a cold-blooded killer of the most depraved type. He was a sadistic strangler.
Whom did he strangle?
Old records place the number of his victims as between 30 and 40.
Say.
That room in the tower was the scene of his crimes, which may be the reason his evil spirit lingers there.
Oh, bunk. Pardon me, Malvin, but you can't convince me that spirits linger anywhere on Earth.
Still, the fact remains that no one can remain in that room after nightfall.
You said that before, so I reckon you believe it, but I'll remain in your haunted room any night you say.
If I permitted it, you wouldn't see it through.
Is that so? Say, are you a betting man?
On occasion, why?
Because I'll bet you $100 that I'll stay in your tower room tonight.
Me too, Robert. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Sorry, old chap, but I never make a wager of less than £1,000.
£1,000? That's $5,000.
Well, if Mr. Malvin insists on throwing money away, I'll just take him for $1,000.
Very well. I'll make out my check. You cover it. And Beckett here will hold the stake.
I'll cover it. Where's the fountain pen?
Use mine, old chap.
The terms are that you will remain in that room from midnight until sunrise. If you fail, your wager is forfeit.
And when we come down cheerfully to a late breakfast, you forfeit yours.
Exactly. Here's my check, Beckett.
Here's mine.
Right, sir.
It's nearly midnight now. Take us to your tavern, Mr. Malvin. I'm just dying to see the play.
Very well. Well, there's no electricity in the room, but you'll have plenty of candles and be quite comfortable. At first... Oh, do you carry a pistol, Christy?
A pistol?
What would Robert be told in a pistol?
Since you have none, I'll lend you one of mine. One has a feeling of security with a gun in his possession, even though it will prove of little value against the dead whom you may meet.
Well, will you listen to this man, Susie?
If he keeps on, he'll have me bleeding in his skull.
Believe as you like, but at the first indication of something abnormal in that room, I advise you to consider your lives. Rather than your wager.
If we see a spook big enough to drive us out of that room, I'll consider it worth £1,000.
That's why we came to England, because we hoped something different would happen.
I've an idea that tonight you shall see something very different, Mrs. Christie. I'm quite positive that you shall.
O'clock, honey. We've been here over an hour. This must be the night when Malvin's ghost don't work.
I reckon. But I've got to confess it. When we first came in here, I had cold shivers running up and down my spine.
Well, I don't wonder. This is sure enough what a haunted room should look like.
Yes, it's so full of spooky shadows and dark corners. You know, I'm not scared of anything, but I'm awfully glad we have so many cows here.
It wouldn't be very cheerful without them, that's a fact. You know, to folks who were the least bit superstitious, all that talk that Malvin handed out and the appearance of this old room, well, their imaginations might get working so they'd be scared to death.
Yes, imaginations are powerful things. Oh, what's that?
I don't know. Oh, I see. Honey, it's just an old loose shutter banging against the window. Look.
Oh, it startled me. Pretty old room, this, isn't it? I mean, if you let your imagination get going.
No, no danger you and me doing that.
Well, I should say there isn't. Only, Robert, what do you think makes Mr. Malvin so sure that something's going to happen here tonight? Of course, we've only known him a couple of weeks, which is hardly time enough to judge, but he doesn't strike me as the sort of man who'd bet £1,000 for, well, just for the fun of betting.
Well, Malvin isn't the kind you call a natural chance-taking gambler, is he?
He must believe there's something queer about this room, insisting you take his gun and all.
Oh, that's because he and the Becketts are just superstitious idiots. Still, I shouldn't be making crackpot bets like this. Guess I've been drinking a little too much lately, Susie.
I'm afraid you have been, Robert. Oh, I don't care about the foolish things that makes you do like betting, but, Robert, it's pulling you away from me.
Oh, no, Susie.
Yes. We're drawing away from one another. Away from the time you used to hold me on your knee and
sing your rockabye, baby. Like a crazy lunatic.
Yes, but it wasn't crazy. It was something precious. We were just kids when you sang it to me first. I was only 5.
And I was 9. With a mother instinct.
Don't make fun about it. You did it because you loved me. As I grew up, you kept on doing it all the time we were going together, while we were engaged and first after we were married. You haven't a very good singing voice, Robert, and you helped me uncomfortably most times, but that song was a foolish, wonderful secret between us two. It was a kind of symbol of our love, and don't sing it to me anymore.
I haven't forgot our love, Susie. And I haven't forgot our song. Come here on my knee, honey. You're going to be rocked in my arms right now.
Robert, you're mudding my dress.
What do we care about an old dress and there's important singing to be done? I love you, little sweetheart.
Darling, I love you.
Rock-a-bye, baby, on the treetop. When the bough...
What's that?
I don't know.
Oh, it's just the window curtain slipping in the wind.
Yeah, but it sure ruined my song. Say, look here, honey. If you're getting nervous about that room, this old room, that £1,000 bet don't mean anything to me.
I'm not nervous. Why should I be when there's nothing here to be nervous about? Robert, 2 of our candles just went out.
Candle?
Yes.
Oh, the wind must have blown.
Light them again, will you? There isn't any too much light here when all of them are going.
Well, that's a fact, there ain't. Say, Mr. Beckett borrowed my matches and forgot to give them back.
Take one of the candles that's going and relight the others for me.
That's an idea. Doggone, this one went out. It's a reach for.
Well, close the window and shut out the wind that's doing it.
Yeah. There. Now they'll be all right.
Robert, there goes another candle.
Well, the wind didn't blow it out.
Not with the window closed.
Well, I wonder what...
Dear, another's going.
That's funny. These candles just suddenly flicker out and die. There goes another.
What's causing it?
I don't know. There goes another.
Relight him quick. If you don't, we'll be in darkness.
No, I will, honey. Don't you be scared.
Oh, 2 more went out. There's only 3 left.
I'll get one of them and...
That one's gone now.
This one just went.
Only 1's left.
Now it's gone now.
Robert, put your arms around me. Hold me tight.
Here I am, honey. Here I am.
I made those candles all go out.
I don't know, but there's some natural explanation for it. Don't you be scared.
I'm not. Only I can't bear this darkness. Take me to the window where the moon's shining in.
Yeah, yeah.
Quick.
Come on, we're getting the light.
There's shadows all about us here. Such ugly shadows.
There's only shadows, Susie. This is just a plain old room. Nothing here can hurt us but our own imagination.
I know. It isn't possible that old murderer who lost his head for strangling folks could come back here from the grave.
Of course it's not. Imagination is all the ghosts are made of.
Yes. Imagination. Just imagination.
Sounds like footsteps.
They're in this room.
No, it can't be. We'd have heard the door open. There's only 1 door to this room.
Some things, Shadow, don't have to come through doors.
No, honey, no. Don't say such things.
Robert, look!
It's just a shadow.
No, it's a man without a head.
Whoever you are, keep back. I have a gun. I'll take you full of lead.
It's moving towards us. Shoot! Don't let it touch us!
What? Don't stop it!
It's a dead. Come back to him!
It's reaching out his arm.
It's strangling him.
Well, throat!
No!
No!
This is just doing wonders to cheer me up tonight. These tales are pretty intense. From 1934, The Witch's Tale, with a little bit of violence and screaming. I feel so good.
Yes. And I looked it up, and boy, was I wrong. Hermit's Cave did not show up in 1933, as I thought. It did not show up until 1937. So, it just, and it went on until about 1942, but I'm just thinking, wow. I did not expect it that it did not come on. So she truly was a mother, father, parent of horror hosts.
Ah. Yeah, she's the grand dam of all hosts, to me at least, in terms of timelines.
She also beat out in timeline Lights Out by a little bit, but that Lights Out didn't, especially when it was Willis Cooper who started that and created it, really didn't have a host. Even when Arch Obler took it over, Arch Obler's Lights Out, he wasn't really a horror host. He was the author, and he was hosting it very much what Rod Serling does.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we do have a little bit of that coming your way, Lights Out, after tonight's tale. Our middle tale, Rock-A-Bye Baby. 1930s, some great stuff came out of the 30s. You got the Universal classics, great gangster films, even some of the early classic westerns, all from the 1930s.
Yep.
CW, so a woman was the first. Who won the world? Girls. You know how right you are, because if you think about it, also in television. The first horror host was Vampira.
That's right.
Or at least the first documented that I know of that's been, you know, had and quite a following she had, too. Go girl power.
Okay.
And let's go ahead and the gal of the hour, Nan the Old Witch, hosting Rock-A-Bye Baby. We'll be back after the exciting conclusion.
Oh, how she's...
So did he. Then she dropped to the floor, fainted most likely, and I made my getaway. Quick, help me out of this costume before he brings her from the room.
Well, Agnes is down the hall. She'll storm here already. Oh, what a cushy game this is. A secret passage bathroom, candles with prepared wicks. Your ghastly head was made.
Not forgetting the way I built the story up. Any fool who bet he's not afraid of ghosts and the gun with tampered cartridges made him sure it was the dead they shot at, besides ensuring me they'd use no weapons of their own. I told you this was the greatest easy money scheme I ever had.
It certainly appears so.
And this is only the first time we've worked it. With all the silly chumps there are in London, we'll soon make a fortune at it. I'm all right now. Hide that costume in the cupboard.
Right-o.
Hurry, hurry. Agnes can't stall in the hall much longer.
Well, I'm with you now. Open the door.
Well, there's Agnes. George, she's alone.
What? Christie's aunt with her?
No. Agnes, haven't they come out yet?
No. And there hasn't been a sound from that room since they screamed. I told you this scheme was too fantastic to succeed. You frightened them, all right. But then their common sense returned. And now they're in there laughing at
us. I won't believe that. They were terrified.
Then why haven't they come out?
What?
Listen. It's Christie's voice. He's singing.
Yes, Rock-A-Bye Baby. A lullaby to let us know your ghost won't spoil his beauty sleep. You terrified him?
Be still. There's something queer about that song.
What do you mean?
That singing is queer.
I'm going to find out why.
Keep away from that door, you fool.
No. There's something wrong in that room. Give me that candle, Agnes. Come on.
George, the accent boy doesn't see us. And his great life so still in his arms.
Oh, God. I think she's dead.
Dead all right. Get a fright.
He was mad, a childish innocent. God, I can still hear that lullaby he sang over and over and over as he rocked her body in his arms. Beckett and I left England the next morning. I've been here in Paris ever since, 5 years.
The Beckett's are dead, you say?
Yes, train wreck in Belgium, 6 months after the Christie thing happened.
Unfortunate.
Unfortunately, it didn't happen sooner. The poor judge got drunk and blabbed the story. It never been known otherwise. That's how you came to hear of it, I suppose.
Indirectly, yes. But it's only recently I learned that you were Melvin.
I had to change my name. Christie's relatives were looking for me. People from his part of the States go in for vendetta, like the Corsican banditti, I've heard. But since you're an American, you probably know more about Kentuckians than I do.
Well, I know their reputation. Christie himself is dead now.
Yes, I saw it in the papers. Died singing Rockabye Baby, I suppose. Oh, let's not talk about it anymore. I wouldn't mention the thing, only you sort of drag it from me.
You shouldn't mind discussing anything with me.
I don't. I trust you. You're my kind, a wise one, an easy money schemer. The only bit of luck I've had in the past 5 years was meeting you.
Luck for me as well. To meet such a clever, imaginative fellow who can use his wits to get what fools must work for.
Joan, will you marry me?
Marry you?
Yes, I'm mad about you. We'd make a great team with your looks and my experience. The easy money would just roll in.
Oh, Melvin, this is so sudden.
Oh, I don't blame you for laughing. I forgot I'm wearing shabby, worn-out clothes, and I'm down and out. I have been. On my word, I don't know why you even sit and talk with me in such a public place as this cafe.
If you can get back your nerve, you won't be a has-been any longer.
My nerve?
Yes. The Christie thing broke you. You've admitted since that night in England, you haven't had a bit of luck. It isn't luck that's been against you, but your mind. I'll tell you why I've met you here each day. It's because I think we would make a great team. Melvin, if you can prove to me that you're a man and not a coward, I'll go along with you. I'll marry you.
Joan, if you mean that, I'll do anything you say.
All right. Tomorrow we go to England.
I don't dare.
Nonsense. 5 years is a long time. They'll have forgotten why you ran away by now. And we're going back to live in your ancestral estate of Malvern Manor.
No.
Yes. Your scheme of the haunted room and headless ghost is the greatest I ever heard. We're going to work it for everything it's worth.
I'll never try that again.
You will. It's a perfect racket. Only a man of imagination could have planned a game like that.
Imagination. Yes, I have imagination, all right. An imagination that for 5 years has kept that room before my eyes, that's dinned it into my ears. A madman's song. All right. It stole my nerve. But I can't return to that house to get it back.
All right, then. You and I are through.
Don't say that. Oh, don't go away, Joan. I'll do anything you say.
Then you go to Malvern Manor, and I marry you. On condition that our bridal night is spent in that tower room.
Bridal night? In that tower room?
Yes. As you regain your nerve, you'll also gain a wife and partner. That appeals to my imagination. You see, I have imagination, too, dear. It's a great thing in our life.
Mind these narrow stairs, Joan. Don't want my brand new wife to have a fall. Dad, it's good to be in this old house again.
I knew you'd enjoy your return, Malvern Manor.
You're right to make me come here. Has given me back my nerve. What a chump I was to stay away from England all these years. The Christie affair simply made the natives here believe that old room is really haunted. Good example of how ghostly legends start.
Yes. Imagination needs but a grain of sand to build a mountain.
Well, here we are, dear. The tower room. My bridal night. Yet I've waited and longed for this.
All right. How gloomy it is here, with only candlelight.
It's not a very cheerful place. But it was your idea that we occupy. Let me close the door. Now at last. We're alone.
I wonder if we're alone.
Of course we are.
How can you be sure? In a room where you've seen a ghostly legend start. Where did you find Robert Christie singing Rockabye Baby?
Joan, let's not talk about that now.
I wish to talk about it for your nerve's sake. The room this is for the scheme you work. So full of eerie shadows.
Yes. So it gave me the idea to play on fool's imagination. What's that?
I think a shutter blew against the wall outside.
Oh, that just startled me.
Back to this room. Anything might happen here.
especially in the darkness.
Joan.
What? Their candles just went out.
Eh? Must be a draft.
Oh, it's possible. The windows are closed. There goes another.
What made them go out?
Well, perhaps their wicks have been tampered with, like those which you once used.
No, there hasn't any reason to play such a trick on me.
Of course not. There'd be no easy money in it.
Well, there goes another candle.
And another.
There go three at once. Where are my matches, Joan? You borrowed them. And all the candles have gone out. Let me find the door.
What? You're not afraid to be in the dark?
Afraid? Oh, what rot. You brought me here to prove my nerve. I'll show you it's all right. Only, Joan, come here where I can see you by this little bit of moonlight. Where are you, Joan? What's that? Joan, is it your footsteps I hear? Is it you who's walking toward me? Joan, why don't you answer me? Ah! Christy's here! I see him in the moonlight! Christy! Risen from the dead!
That's what I brought you here to see, Malvin. To see and hear the walking dead. Now you know the terror he ensues in you. It's Robert Christie's sister whom you married, Malvin. 5 years I've searched for you until I found you to bring the only justice that would fit your crime. Cower against that wall and stare at him in fear. Oh, Robert's still alive. I can't command the dead, or Susie would be with him. But you know the power of imagination now. Look at him, alive. A helpless, harmless madman with only lucid moments of memories of horror. He and his physician have been hidden in this house for days, waiting for you to come here on your bridal night. Your bridal night. I promised you our wife and partner. Your wife is here. Your partner death. So now I'm going to kill you. Turn your eyes from Robert and look into this gun. Turn your eyes and look upon it as I fire it at your heart. Say something. Look at me before I shoot. Look at me, I say. Malvin!
Christy!
Is that you, Doctor?
Yes, let me in.
Oh, wait.
It's Christy. I've come to tell you.
Oh, never mind. Come in and bring that candle. All I want you to tell me is, what's the matter with this man? Here he is, leaning against this wall. Look at me, Malvin. Doctor, he fell as I touched him.
This man is dead. That gun in your hand, did you?
No. Oh, no, I didn't kill him. Out of fright. As Susie did. Imagination. Imagination.
Miss, you're hysterical. You've got to pull yourself together. I don't know what happened in this room tonight, but it's still another shock that you must bear.
A shock?
Yes, your brother.
My brother. Where did Robert go? He was with me here just before I let you in.
He was with you here?
Of course. You sent him as I told you to, up that secret passageway when I pressed the signal button.
But I couldn't send him. Before your signal came, your brother's heart stopped beating.
My brother.
Robert died 10 minutes ago. You knew his condition. His heart just stopped. That's what I came up to tell you.
But I tell you, my brother was here. Doctor.
Look. Look. Among those shadows there.
Robert. And Susie's in his arms again. Imagination. Imagination.
You never can tell about imagination, Satan. You never can tell why it begins or why it ends. Now, you folks, sit still a minute, and we'll come back and tell you about the cheerful little yarn we've got for you next week. Ha, 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 ha. Satan, next week when these folks come to see us, we're going to take them to Chinatown in San Francisco. To Chinatown. And there we're going to spin him our yarn of the concession. The concession.
You think about it, Dave, the music's not too bad from this one.
No, coming back from 1934, it's not bad at all.
No, not at
all. Interesting story for that time, too.
Yes, yes. Kind of interesting notions there.
Yeah, and considering, you know, 1934, this had to be on late at night. I mean, there weren't guidelines or anything, but still, you wouldn't want youngsters hearing this, but they would be the ones that would love it.
Absolutely. Kids love monsters, or they used to. Maybe they still do.
So she married the guy just to kill him, huh?
Why not?
Well, at least she's got a castle now.
Don't they all? Some do it quicker than others. The
sometimes
evil ones like to make it last.
That's right. Sometimes it's a very slow death.
Oh, God. Help us. Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, this is our plea for help on Erie House Radio.
Speaking of
join
help.
Join us for the telethon of the married man.
That's right. We need more toys.
Or beer money, whatever.
It's true. That could be it.
Toys,
yeah,
I'm very blessed with toys. I have many toys.
I see this on Facebook. There's this thing, a picture of a pizza box on it. It actually has on it, open box before eating pizza. And you know, when you see things like that, it does remind me of these things called the Darwin Awards. Since we're talking about executions and deaths. Well,
yes.
And of course, as you know, Darwin Awards salute the improvement of humanity genome by honoring those who accidentally removed themselves from it in a spectacular manner.
I.e., really dumbasses who killed themselves. It's a less genteel way of saying it. Dave, lead us off.
Oh, okay. You want me to lead us off? Okay. How about, let's do this. The Pinnacle of Stupidity, it's called.
my life story.
In the end, cold was not the culprit. This is from October. In 2020, I think there would be a lot more of these because everybody was stuck at home and got bored and did stupid things, I think. Anyway. This is from October 28th of 2019. They awarded in 2020. Hands are numb, must operate smartphone, muttered 47-year-old Tezbu to his live stream audience as he skidded and stumbled up the snow-covered Shaversian Trail of Mount Fuji. I wish I had brought heat packs, he lamented. And then he was heard to say, wait, I think I'm slipping. 62 miles west of Tokyo, iconic Mount Fuji is one of Japan's three holy mountains, a 12,389-foot volcanic summit visited by religious pilgrims, mountain climbers, and sightseers. Trek is cold and slippery even during the brief summer season when amenities stations are staffed and available for the benefit of climbers. In the off-season, the stations are closed, and mountains conditions are downright hostile and inhospitable. A winter climber needs the proper gear, climbing experience, and a booster pack of common sense. because you, alas, lacked all three, wearing street clothes suitable for a typical October day in Tokyo and carrying nothing more than a pair of climbing poles, Tenzu fired up his smartphone and proceeded up the Shibarsia Trail, which, incidentally, most climbers use only for descent. Live streaming for the Nikal video sharing platform, he entitles his video, "Let's Go to Snowy Mount Fuji." In hindsight, the title implies that Tenzo considered Snowy Mount Fuji as safe as ski resort or Christmas tree farm. Viewers began tuning in following his happy jaunt up the ash-covered trail. Ashes soon turned to snow and then to deep snow. Tenzo's viewers were now being treated to a litany of complaints about cold, numb hands and bitter lack of hot packs. Those watching might have started to feel a bit badly for Tenzu. This was a very good time for him to turn back and resume a life keyword of relatively relative anonymity, a turning point, as it were, but the urge to continue, perhaps motivated by reluctance to disappoint his viewers, encouraged Tenzu to trudge further into obvious and imminent danger. Continuing social media commentary as he juggles climbing poles and smartphone in his frostbitten midst, Tenzu demonstrates a classic case of misplaced priorities when he states that despite numb extremities, he must continue to operate his live stream. His viewers no doubt notice that the trail has suddenly become narrower and the protective fence has ended and he is perilously close to the brink. He is now past the point of no return. There's absolutely nothing his viewers could do except tune out in disbelief or perhaps place wagers amongst themselves on his odds of returning intact. "Oh, this place is a slippery and getting dangerous," he belatedly notices. "I'm trying to walk by the rocks, and yes, rocks, it's steep downhill." Does his audience hear reassuring sound of Krampus gripping on the ice as he continues past the end of safety fence and onto certain territory? Of course not. He did not bring crampons. The slope at the point is 30 degrees, as anyone still watching could see. This continued play-by-play march along the increasingly risky path, Tenzu frequently cautions himself against falling. Some of his viewers might have given a wry chuckle and the sudden realization of what he had gotten himself into. His inappropriate footwear now begins failing him as he trips and stumbles on more than ice. He asks himself whether he's on the right track. Viewers already know the answer. Astonishingly close to the summit for an amateur winter hike, Tenzu at last utters the anticlimactic words, "Wait, I'm slipping." Experienced Mount Fuji climbers say if you start the slipping, you have one chance to self-arrest before it's too late. Even now, Tenzu might drop his phone and jab his climbing poles into the ground. But no, in an instant, it becomes apparent that his smartphone is the more intelligent one. Still live streaming away, Tenzu begins an uncontrollable slide down the rocky, snowy slope. Viewers are treated to a spectacle of feet flailing and poles tumbling free. A few seconds later, the phone footage abruptly stops. The final chilling image shows a climbing pole frozen in mid-flight. Hello? Are we frozen in mid-flight?
Ironized Yeast presents Lights Out. Everybody. It is later than you think.
This is Arch Obler. Tonight, the makers of Ironized Yeast bring you a story not of imaginary terrors. No, ladies and gentlemen, tonight's play will thrill and chill you beyond any power of the supernatural, because this story is based on cruel, grim reality. So tonight we urge you not to avoid this excitement and tension. Rather, we urge you to turn your radios up and listen as you've never did before.
Herr Himmler.
Heil Hitler. Well, mein Führer, I have the report. Now, look here, Herr Hitler, it's no use getting so red in the face. That won't help anything. What happened, happened, and as long as we know why it happened, I'll see to it won't happen again. So nothing is lost and something is gained. Now, here, I have the report here. It arrived by courier only 5 minutes ago. I rushed it right up. Didn't even stop to read it myself. So, I will read. Official report on the Renoir incident as made by Captain Hans Mauchlich to Major Heinrich von Trapperitz, commanding officer 3rd Division Army of Occupation at headquarters Paris. Heil Hitler. I, Hans Mauchlich, captain, member of elite guard assigned to 3rd Division Army Occupation, being in my right mind and in full realization of the consequences to me, make the following statement. On the day of April 7th at 2 o'clock in the morning, Sergeant Carl Fischl, while on patrol duty in the town of Renoir, was shot at by unidentified woman and slightly wounded in the left thigh. In accordance with orders
radioed from Paris headquarters, I at once placed the entire population of Renoir under arrest, and in accordance with further orders received, collected 50 female hostages to be hanged in the village square unless the criminal who had shot Sergeant Fischl was turned over to me at once. These French women were placed in the basement of the town hall, and precisely at sundown, having assembled the populace in the public square, I mounted the scaffold platform which had been erected there and spoke to this village of criminals.
Attention! Attention! I warn you, no disturbances or I will give the order to fire. Now for the last time, who among you is guilty of this crime? Speak! So, very well. The next time, every man and woman in this town will be deported for hard labor in the Reich. This time, we will proceed with the executions. Silence! Sergeant, the first prisoner.
At this point in my report, may I explain that the 50 women to be executed had been picked at random by squads sent through the town a few hours before. I personally knew none of them, but I personally counted them as they entered the place of imprisonment, and I personally posted the guard. That I know.
The first prisoner, bind her hands up to the platform. Noose around her neck. Oh. Tighten the rope. Place her on the trap door. So. The prisoner will lift her head. Lift your head. Look at me.
At this point in the report, may I describe the prisoner? Sex, female. Age, indeterminate. Clothes, indeterminate. She lifted her face as ordered. Then a strange thing happened. She smiled. Yes, smiled.
You smile? Why do you smile? Very well, the trap door. Hang her.
Herr Captain.
Well, her neck is broken. Do not cut her down yet. People of the town of Renoir, the first of your women hangs here. The first evidence that to harm a soldier of the Holy Reich means death. Certain death. Remove the body. Bring out the next prisoner.
At this point in my report, may I explain my plan? To hang was not enough. No. These Frenchmen and their women and their children must learn their lesson in a way they would never forget. One by one, the women would be brought out. One by one, they would stand on the platform. One by one, the rope around the neck, trap door, the body twisting and turning in death. Coming through that door, climbing then to the scaffold and dying. 50 of them, and it would take hours. And these Frenchmen and these French women and their children would never forget this lesson. Bring her here over the trapdoor. Rope around her neck. No, no, do not bind this one. It is better that they out there see her dance at the end of the rope. The other die too quickly. Ready?
Yes, Captain.
The prisoner will lift her face. Lift your face. Your face. You are related to the one who just died. Answer me. Very well. People of Renoir, you see before you the second of you who is to die for the crime against the Reich. This one, I can see, is related to the first. A sister, perhaps. It will not save her. The crime must be avenged.
You laugh.
Hang her.
Herr Captain, her neck is broken.
Broken? So small a woman? Why should... Sergeant, they drop too far. Shorten the rope. Let them struggle before they die. The next prisoner. At this point in my report, may I state that all day it had been threatening rain. In spite of that fact, I had not felt it good psychology to postpone the executions. At this point, the time was 4:30, and the sky was getting quite dark, but I was determined to complete the executions. By the time the next woman stood on the scaffold, it was very dark. People of Renoir, the third criminal to die for the crime against the Reich. The crime must be avenged.
You laugh too? Why? You're going to die? Why do you laugh?
You will know.
Hang her. At this point in my report, I will state that this woman did not die easily. I could tell that from the faces of the people and the animal cries that came to their lips as they watched this woman of theirs flinging about at the end of the rope. I was quite pleased. Silence, silence! Well, people of Renoir, she thought she would not die. You see, she is dead. There is no escape from the vengeance of the Reich. Bring up the next one. Stop that drum! Yes, people of Renoir, there is no escape from the power of the Third Reich. Today over all Europe, tomorrow over all the world. What power is there to stop us? All right, bring the prisoner up here, quickly. At this point in my report, may I say it was darker than before. The clouds. There was a feeling of an electrical storm in the air. Hurry her up there. Hurry her up.
Sergeant, turn on the floodlights. Let no one move. Shoot down anyone who tries to leave the square. Do not think the storm will make any difference. Here you are, and here all of you will stay until the last one of your criminals is hanged.
All right, soldier. Do not stand there. The noose. Put it around her neck.
No.
Soldier, are you out of your mind? Why do you stand there? What is it?
Look at her. Look at her.
At this point in my report, I wish to state that I am not sure if I am in my right mind completely now. But at the time I am speaking of, I knew exactly what I was hearing and seeing.
Captain, look at her. I tell you, look at her.
You?
I.
Sergeant, Sergeant!
Yes, Captain.
The bodies, are they down there?
Yes, Captain.
How many? Answer me, how many?
Three.
Three?
Three.
So, you, woman, you think you will make jokes with me? You are of the same family.
Yes, that is it. You are of the same...
Thank her. At this point in my report, I will state only that I immediately ordered the next prisoner up to the scaffold. The fifth prisoner.
Captain, this one, the same?
You crazy fool, how can that be? Here, the searchlight, here. No. You are not. How can that be? Sergeant, how many now? The truth, tell me the truth.
Four, Captain.
The truth, I order you.
Four bodies, I swear it, Captain.
And their faces. Look at their faces.
Answer me, they're papers.
All the same, Captain. The same.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's take a moment now to look around to reassure ourselves that we are where we are in the free America of today, where thousands of people are able to say,
man, oh man, am I going good, making more money than I ever did. Sure, taxes are tough, and I'm putting my 10% in war bonds, but even so, I've got plenty left to spend for fun.
To spend for fun? Do you think our fighting men in Africa are having fun? Was it fun for our boys at Guadalcanal fighting off the Japs from foxholes? Being shot down in flames over Berlin, is that fun?
Why, no, but like I said, I'm putting my 10% in war bonds.
This is no 10% war, my friend. Our servicemen are fighting at 100%. And that's exactly why the news from Africa is good, why we won at Guadalcanal, why we're moving toward the offensive on other fronts. Do you want more American victories? Do you want our men to march into Berlin at the earliest possible moment?
Why, yes, of course.
Then back them up as they are fighting for us, 100%. Put that money you've got for fun into more war bonds. War is expensive, and if we hold back here on the home front, we'll needlessly prolong the war, thus throwing away thousands of American lives. Are dollars for fun more precious than the lives of American fighting men, of your fighting man? You know they're not. And remember, friends, the quicker the victory, the fewer lives lost. And if we want victory sooner, every American of us must do more. So go to your nearest bank or post office, wherever war bonds are sold in your town, and put every cent you don't really need into bonds. Do it for your own sake and for the sake of our fighting men. They give their lives. We must lend our money.
That's right. And give till it hurts. It hurts the bad guys.
That's right. And we didn't talk much about going into Lights Out and Arch Oboler. Of course, this is in the midst of World War II, where April 27, 1943, about 1 month from now, 87 years ago. And we're still ramping up to try and finish off the war if we could. And, of course, that wouldn't come for another almost 2 years.
Yeah, so almost 2 years later when we finished business on both Europe and in the Pacific.
Yeah, and Arch Oboler foresaw this in 1938 when he wrote The Laughing Man. Couldn't understand how we were just ignoring everything that was happening out there. But it wasn't until we personally were attacked before we finally became involved.
Yeah, so. It took that, and we took care of business. An amazing time in American history.
And quite an interesting story going on. Every woman looks the same as he's executing them one by one.
Yeah, nice guy. Hey, Rob Smith joins us in the chat. Welcome, welcome. Linda Lou had to go. She was with us for a time, but thanks for joining Fogsbane, CW, and ourselves.
And with that, we should jump right into the exciting conclusion, as only Arch Oboler can give us.
That'll give us just enough time to wrap it up. Here's Lights Out's execution.
At this point in my report, I say only that it began to rain, a terrible rain. And we stood there in the rain, the people all round the scaffold, my soldiers, and on the platform, the hangman and I, and the woman. All the same.
You hang for vengeance, don't you, Nazi? One German soldier shot at by a French woman who had the blessed right to kill him. And you think you will have the vengeance with 50?
Laugh. It's always the same.
Shall I tell you about vengeance, Captain? You Germans think you know all about it. But let me tell you of the real vengeance.
Hang her!
At this point in my report, I will tell you of my thoughts. These women, the same, was not possible. I left the scaffold and went below to where the bodies lay. With my flashlight, I looked. Broken necks. Faces quite the same. Shut off the light, I climbed back to the scaffold. I was not disturbed, because now I understood. The families of these French were large, and all these were sisters. Five sisters. Yes, trying to frighten me. Well, that was ended with their broken necks. I ordered out the next woman for her execution.
People of Renoir, there will be no further demonstrations of any sort. You will stand there in the rain until all your women criminals are dead. Five sisters have died. And I am certain that is the end of that family. And who is this frightened one with her hands in front of her face? All right, keep them there. Corporal, get the new noose around her neck. Hang her quickly.
What?
A face. Another one. Oh, you French, such families. Worthy of we Germans. But we have men, and you give birth to useless women. Six women, and all of them born to be hanged.
Shall I tell you about vengeance, Nazi?
What?
You Germans think you know all about it. But let me tell you of the real vengeance.
Captain, the other one said those words.
Shut your mouth. You, woman, how do you know the words your sister said?
I said them.
How could you?
You think you know about vengeance, you Germans. Well, you don't. Vengeance, too, has to be based on truth. And what is your vengeance? You began a war once and lost it. To whom did you lose it? To these little people. To that little rabbi whose back you broke in a concentration camp. To that little child who suffocated under her mother's body in Poland.
Hang her!
At this point in my report, I state only that I made sure this one hanged until she was dead. And then I waited a little while before I ordered the next one out. The rain was very heavy. All the people stood there in the square below the scaffold, heads bowed to the rain. And in the light of the searchlights, they and the soldiers guarding them were like living dead, standing there unburied.
Captain, this one, she's the same.
What? Maya, bring her up here.
No. You hanged her and she's not dead. Not dead. Who is she? Run for your lives. Run. Run.
Bring her up here. She's not the same. She can't be the same one. Turn the searchlight on.
The same one?
Run! Stand where you are. Then open fire. Shoot them down. Sergeant, Corporal, where are you running? Stand, soldiers. Do not run. I order you. The lights. Why did you turn off the searchlights? Turn them on. I order you to turn them on.
Soldiers. Gone.
Are you frightened, Captain? Put the rope around my neck.
You are not safe. I saw you hang.
Put the noose around my neck.
The bodies. I can see them down there.
Hang me. You want your vengeance. 50 times the rope must stretch. 50 bodies piled like cordwood. And you call that vengeance? Shall I tell you of vengeance, Nazi? The vengeance of the people of the murdered republics. What was their crime? They wanted freedom from poverty. And your battleships stood off their shores and your airplanes filled their skies and gave them blood to drink. Their own. The vengeance of the people of Poland. What was their crime? They wanted to live, just to live. So the treads of your tanks ground them into the dirt, and then your bombs lifted them out of the dirt. The vengeance of the people of Belgium, whose crime was that they were weary of a battle they did not quite understand because you had given them confusion. And so you stripped them of human dignity and made them slaves to live on bloody knees before the masters of your Reich. The vengeance of Holland. Oh, that will be a horrible vengeance, Nazi. For their crime was the crime of being men, of standing up and saying, this is our land and this is our freedom. dare take them from us. So you swept over them. And when they could no longer fight, you took your vengeance by the murder of 40,000 of them. And the vengeance of Great Britain. Oh, that will be a terrible vengeance, Nazi. It will be a vengeance that will...
Oh. Oh, I will hang you. Rope around your neck. Now talk.
At this point in my report, I swear by the grave of my mother I tell the truth. I hanged this woman with my own hands. I made sure that she was dead. And then I reached down and cut the rope. I heard the body fall below in the dark. But when I got up off my knees and stood up on the scaffold again, another woman was there. And it was she.
The vengeance of Norway. Theirs, too, was the crime of free men content to live on their own land. And you put a swastika over their crosses and murdered their sons and starved their children. And the vengeance of the Balkans. So many vengeances, Nazi. Did you ever think of them? You with your little vengeances against the helpless, the women, the children. Did you ever think of this moving mountain of great vengeance that is sweeping toward you? The vengeance of the Russians, whose crime was that they wanted their own freedom, their own way, and who saw the hard work of 20 years ground under your pouncers and your Stukas. Oh, Nazi, theirs will be a terrible vengeance. Theirs will be...
And then there was another one. Another, but the same.
And the vengeance of the Americans. Their crime, that they were strong and they didn't like you and they laughed at you. And then their laughter turned to anger, and you were afraid of their anger, so you lifted another one's hand and gave them the treachery of a knife thrust in the back. And you drowned their men in the seas, and you...
I can report only what I saw. The trapdoor fell. She, too, was gone. The rope twisting and turning... And I was alone on the scaffold. Alone. I was alone. Yes, the rope twisting and turning. And I was alone. And then, who shall I swear this on? What do I believe in to swear this on? I heard footsteps coming up the steps to the scaffold. And I ran to the edge, and I looked. The lightning flashes were quick, one after the other. And by them I saw that I had hanged 8. There were 42 left. And now they were coming up the stairs, these 42, one after the other, one after the other, in a line that reached back across the square, coming to me. Who are you? What do you want? I report this. They came on the platform, one after the other, one after the other. The scaffold moved under the weight of them. And then the lightning came again. And I saw all of them. She.
Poland, Belgium, Holland, Norway, Greece, Yugoslavia, Russia, Britain, America. I tell you, Nazi, no matter what the clever ones try to do at the peace tables, the people will not forget their vengeance. They will not forget their dead children and their dead wives and their dead sons and their dead mothers and their dead sisters and their dead lovers and their dead hopes and their dead wasted years. They will not stop at the borders of your Germany this time. They will march into it, into your Germany, the people. And their vengeance will be on every one of you who traded the cross for the swastika and the great God of humanity for the little man who thought he was God.
Who are you? I report only this one last thing. As I asked the words, "Who are you?" suddenly it was no longer all these women speaking with one mouth, but in the rain and the lightning, I saw them moving together, and all of them began to become one woman, a terrible thing that grew and grew into the air. I lifted my face to see. The lightning crashed about the top of her, and it was still that woman, towering higher and higher into the air. And when she spoke, her voice was the thunder.
Listen to me, Nazi. When that vengeance comes, you shall not hide behind your little man. For his crimes are his crimes, and your crimes are yours. And each must pay for his crimes.
Who are you?
For the good people of this world will not die this time in vain. This time the vengeance will be their vengeance, and the everlasting peace their peace.
Who are you? I report, I asked that, and suddenly I was lifted in the air. There was thunder and lightning around me too, and up where I was, her voice was a whisper.
I am a French woman who stayed away from my own land too long. So long that some of my countrymen had forgotten that even the memory of me lives only where men fight for me.
Who are you? I close my report. This French woman told me her name, and she told me a place. Through the thunder crash, I heard her. And then the lightning struck, and I was falling through the air. And when I awoke, it was morning, and she was not there. And the scaffold was burned to the ground, and there were no bodies, and the village square was empty. This is the end of my report.
Can you imagine such a report, mein Führer? A woman who grows into the sky. Of course, the man will be shot. Wait a minute. There seems to be an addition to the report. It says, note, the French woman said she could be found at latitude 41 degrees north and at longitude 74 degrees west. Investigation indicates this is a place in the western hemisphere known as Bedloe's Island. Further investigation indicates that there is only one French woman on this island. She is called... the Statue of Liberty?
I see what you mean, Mr. Obler. The Nazis can kill people, but they can never kill the spirit of victory.
Yes, we've seen that proved over and over again in this war. We know how men, women, and children in France and Holland and Norway and every other country that's come under the Nazi heel are fighting back in every way possible. But we know equally well that the will to win is not enough. You can't fight the Japs or the Nazis with courage alone. The only way to fight these murderers effectively is in the language of bombs and bullets. Now, we on the home front who sleep in our comfortable beds and eat good meals in spite of shortages, we're being asked only to send our money to back up those who are fighting for our freedom. Now, if a Nazi isn't outside your door waiting to take you off to a concentration camp because you pray to your God on Sunday, or if a Jap isn't waiting with an executioner's sword, stained with the blood of an American aviator, to cut off your head, it's only because all over the world, men and women of courage are fighting your battle. So the next time you take out a dollar and think, oh, what can I buy now? Think again. Is there anything I want more than I want a world of peace and justice and security of loved ones back home again? And then do what your heart and mind tell you must do. Put every dollar and dime you don't need for actual necessities into this fight by putting them into war bonds and stamps. This may be our last chance to buy the right to live as free men.
Thank you, Mr. Obler. Friends, the makers of ironized yeast have been very happy to dedicate tonight's program to our government's second war loan drive. And now, Mr. Obler, can you tell us a little about next week's story?
Well, before I do that, I'd like to personally thank the ironized yeast folks for giving me the opportunity of presenting this play to you tonight. A word of thanks, too, to Edgar Barrier and Mercedes McCambridge, and to Hans Conried and Lou Merrill. That's to next week. Well, if you've ever wished on a star, listen in. For the play has the provocative title of The Heavenly Jeep. To you lovers of the off the beat, a cordial invitation to be with us when the Heavenly Jeep takes off.
Yes, tune in next Tuesday again for Arch Obler's eerie story, The Heavenly Jeep. And if you need more vitamin B1 and iron, be sure to try ironized yeast. But remember, there's only one ironized yeast. You'll know it instantly by the yellow and orange package and by the big letters IY on the container and on each tablet.
Jeep, jeep, jeep.
It is
jeep.
Later
jeep.
Than
jeep, jeep.
You think.
Jeep. Hey.
Down south, it's white shoe season, and even up north, you're beginning to see white shoes around town. And because of shoe rationing, lots of folks are giving their white shoes the best of care with Energene Shoe White. Energene Shoe White is made with the whitest pigment obtainable. It spreads over shoes easily and dries evenly with a real white, never a dingy off-white. So, to keep white shoes looking better longer, buy Energene Shoe White. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Jeep, Jeep. I always thought Eugene was a heavenly Jeep.
There you go. Yes, he was, wasn't he? The way he floated around. You know, I tried shoe rationing once, but my shoes kept sticking their tongue out at me.
Yeah, but a little. Kind of like the Three Stooges where the soles are kind of not really attached.
Yeah, something like that. You know, this, quite,
worn all
quite
the way through.
Quite the story from Arch Obler in the war effort here on this one. It was still definitely a lights out, but, you know, as he did so many times, he left a message there.
And a patriotic one at that, which just, again, amazing time in history. I do believe it was the greatest generation on Earth, and hopefully the greatest old-time radio program on Earth, at least in Northeast Ohio. Returns tomorrow with another executionary tale from CBS Radio Mystery Theater. It's the classic tale, Occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge.
Yes, written by Ohioan. Why did all of a sudden it just left my brain? But
but he's from Ohio. Yeah.
He's an Ohioan, a Southern Ohioan, and a Civil War a veteran himself. So he didn't just write it. He lived it.
Yep, and it's a great tale. Dave and I were chatting before we started.
Ambrose Bierce. There we are.
Ambrose Bierce. Good night, folks. See you tomorrow, 6:30 Eastern.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Oh, man, that worked out pretty well.
It did. It did.
Not bad for a sleepwalker. I completely conked, Dave.
And the thing is, anymore, the way it goes, I'm not sure whether I got disconnected or you got disconnected or everything just froze up or what, you know?
No, it was me. It was all me. I went into this trance. I swear to God.
I know of what you speak. It's happened to me sitting in front of this microphone myself.
Yep. No, just a long day. Let's see. Been up since 2, worked a half a day. Closed on a mortgage transaction. What else? Ran out to Fligner's in Lorraine. I'll tell you what, Dave. I always get my holiday meats for Easter time at Fligner's. It's like this meat counter is insane. It's like the entire wall of the building, and they've got all kinds of stuff. It's not too far or kind of in a Hispanic neighborhood, so there's a lot of ethnic, really good ethnic food there. If you're looking for certain types of fruits and or peppers, it's a great place to go. And the building is epic. It's from 1925.
Wow. Yeah. And, you know, we've lost so many of those great meat markets. Here in Akron, we had the Ellet Meat Market. That's gone. Down in Hartville, they had actually, it wasn't Hartville, but it was, I think it was called the Hartville Meat Market. And it wasn't actually Hartville, but that's gone. And it just, these are just those home-owned businesses that, you know, just stand out. They, you know, the East Side Market is still going there in Ohio City. Amazing place, an amazing place to go visit.
There used to be an old sausage shop when I lived in Old Brooklyn right by the zoo there. And that thing was around since the teens. A German family owned it. They had, like, mostly bratwursts and have a large variety of them, crazy flavors, some of them.
Yeah.
It was one of the last places I remember getting a lamb butter. Did you ever get lamb butter?
No.
It was a pound of butter
sure
shaped like
is.
A lamb. And they'd put a couple peppercorns on it for eyes. And
oh, okay.
In my morbidity as a youth, I couldn't wait to cut its head off.
So I see.
Nobody wanted the back end of the lamb. But no, it was just a thing. And, like, you know, I grew up in a Catholic family, and we used to put our Easter foods in a basket when we went to Mass, and they would be blessed by the priest. And so we had blessed food on Easter. Yay!
Okay.
Yeah, it was just a tradition we had back in those days.
Back in the day of when we were youngins.
Mm-hmm. Not a bad tradition. I think food can help bring people together. You know what I mean? You share each other's like recipes and try different things. I watched a great video of these tribal people. Most of them seem to be Middle Eastern, but living way out in the sticks in their respective countries. And they were trying for the very first time McDonald's breakfast. And it was just amazing. The expressions on their face, there was a translator talking, of course, explaining what the foods were because they weren't familiar to them. They didn't know what hash browns were. They never saw an egg prepared that way, you know?
Yeah.
Or pseudo eggs, egg powder. I don't
know. So was it look of shock or disdain or what?
No. In most cases, a look of joy when they tasted the things that they hadn't tried before, you know what I mean? Some were relating it to some of their own cultural foods. One guy figured out, you know, how to make an Egg McMuffin because it looked like it was disassembled, or maybe he was inspecting it or whatever, but he said, this is the right way to eat it. And he basically, you know, put the sausage and the egg and the sandwich together. And it was just fascinating to watch. Like I said, especially the expressions, some of them, you know, quite hesitant. You know, this was something new. And then watch that expression change. And very, very few of them had a negative reaction or a negative response. Some of them went in extremely skeptical and came out quite surprised. Even
and
the contrivance of using the coffee cups, you know.
Yeah.
It was neat.
Yeah, yeah. That's funny. Very
fascinating.
Yeah.
And like I said, I think like when people trade, you know, there's some things that, you know, you might find unappealing that someone in another country eats. But then again, you might find something really fantastic that you want to try again and again and again.
Yeah, that's true. So, yeah, it sounds like an interesting turn there. I, you know, when I try something new sometimes, I'm glad there isn't a camera on me.
Especially when it has lots and lots of Scoville units. Yeah! Hot peppers. No, I don't dabble with too much with super hot stuff. But what that has to do with execution, I have no idea. That's the way I want to be executed by
executing
food.
Your taste buds. How's that?
There you go. There you go. But I don't know. Some interesting stories about executions. I loved The Green Mile by Stephen King and the movie adaptation as well. A very touching story.
Yeah. And that's not something you really kind of expect out of Stephen King. But, you know, he's not just a writer of horror. He's a writer.
Yeah. And I think what he does is he creates relatable characters. You know, if you can't relate to them personally, you can relate to the fact that you know someone that shares those attributes of his characters. And I remember him being one of the first contemporary authors that would write things like people actually say them, slang and all, vulgarities, whatever. Definitely don't want little kids reading his stuff, but for a multitude of reasons, but that being one of them. But who else did that? Who's that?
You know who else did that? Old Henry wrote of, and if he were different things, if we were cowboys, he'd do that. If they were bums, he'd speak like them. To the point that he was a very hard read, very great stories, but a very hard read because he used the language of hobos, of cowboys, and whatever situation he was put into.
I love that kind of writing. At a very, very early age, I learned to decipher British accents by reading Hugh Lofting, you know, the original Dr. Doolittle stories. Portions of it were in Cockney. Portions of it were in other dialects from England, and it was a very interesting read. And I think that too, reading can help you learn things kind of culturally too. Kind of neat.
Yes, absolutely. So, yeah,
because I would see contractions I had never seen before, and then you're trying to piece together, well, how does that exactly sound? And maybe later you see a movie with a British or a television show with a British actor, and then you put it together. Oh, that's what he's saying.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh. But I tell you what, the wife loves the stuff from the UK, and whenever we get something that was done in the BBC Scotland, it has to come with the print there, because I can't understand anything those people say.
Denise has trouble with that. I can follow along pretty good with most, unless they're speaking extremely quickly with an extremely thick accent, you know?
You got all the Scottish, do you know?
Scottish is a little harder when it's real thick accent.
Yeah.
That's quite a bit harder.
That's a very difficult one to break down sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, for a language that's somewhat similar to, you know, other Far Eastern European countries from the British Empire, it's a difficult accent
to
understand.
Yeah, it's almost English.
Yeah, almost.
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 Oh, gosh. My. But some really good stories tonight. I'm glad we saved it for the end, was the Lights Out. Just such a well-written and performed. Mercedes McCambridge and Hans Conried and everyone that contributed, absolutely wonderful. And Archibald did something in that particular play that he usually doesn't do. He actually listed out the actors. He usually didn't do that.
Yeah. You're right. That didn't dawn on me until you just mentioned it now. Because he normally doesn't. Maybe there's something there, because I was listening to some Lights Out in my car the other day, and two things I noticed. One, he pronounces her name Mercedes, not Mercedes.
Yeah, he does.
I've always heard it as Mercedes, but
Are you going to correct Arch Obler?
Never. No, I respect... I respect him and his work far too much to think about correcting him. But that's twice I've heard him call out Mercedes McCambridge. So maybe there's a connection
really
there.
She had to be really young then.
Yeah. Yeah, she had quite a career. Didn't know much about her until The Exorcist.
There you go. Yep, that's true.
still doing great voices way, way late in her career.
Yeah. What a talent. And she, and whenever she did a mystery theater, which she did many of them, she would only come and do it if and Hyman Brown knew she was coming. He would make sure she had a good female lead role in it.
Yeah. Radio seemed to take care of their own the way they respected and honored Agnes Moorehead and others.
Yes.
Who really had been in the industry a long time and had great versatility.
Yeah.
Dave, I'm learning so much about radio from you.
You poor guy.
No, that's, I'm grateful for it, and I'm grateful we have this platform to share it with folks that seem to want to listen.
Yeah, I think, and hopefully everybody's having a great time listening to great stories. And like I always like to say, Erie House Radio is a little bit of fact, a little bit of fun, and a whole lot of old-time radio. So, and I truly mean that, because we do share so much, and not just these great stories, but some little tidbits about it, and then little bits of ourselves that we share and write up and perform for you know, everybody coming along too. So,
yeah. This is what, the 489th Erie House or something like that. We're getting real close to 500. Show number 500. We'll try to maybe come up with something special for that. Maybe another music show. That music show was fun.
Yeah, we'll have to, maybe a bunch of World War II numbers would be a fun show to do.
That would be a real hoot.
Between the V-discs and other things that we can pull off of, the different shows and things like that. It could be a lot of fun.
Yep. As old as it is, it doesn't seem like swing music will ever completely go away. The people who enjoyed it in their lifetimes, most of them are long gone. And yet that musical style persists. Every couple decades, somebody comes out with some new twist on it. Like, remember in the 80s, Dave, what was his name? Buster Poindexter? And a couple others would do swing-style tunes. Stray Cats.
And before that, you had, when the Hooked on Classics came on, they had a Hooked on Big Band come on. That brought a lot of people to it. You know, I had a friend who was a music major at Ohio State, and absolutely Hooked on Classics actually bugged him. I said, look, you're turning a lot of people onto some classic music, which I wasn't really into, but you're turning a lot of people onto classic music who never would have bothered to listen to it before, and they're getting pieces that they recognize, and they'll go, some of them may go and explore it more. And the same with the Hooked on Big Band. It did the same thing.
Yeah. I think the Jive Bunny helped out in the 80s, too, a little bit. Where they took the Jive Bunny's the ones that took sometimes they do 50s tunes, but they did a lot of it with big band too. They'd put a backbeat and blend all snippets of all these epic big band songs and put them together. And it was perfect for nightclubs, you know. It had a great beat, you know, and an enhanced backbeat to it, you know, synthetic drums or whatever. And it was fun. I enjoyed playing that in the clubs. It got people going.
Yeah, and I can see why. I mean, you're right. In a way, and it's funny the way it evolved. It went from just bands to then a singer would come in and kind of sing in the middle of it, then go back to the band, and then it became a singer featured in it throughout the song, and then it became the singer who was more important than the band.
Unfortunately, that was the demise of some really good bands in our lifetime, where egos got in the way, and bands that you know were pretty darn good. Would like to see a little more mileage out of them, but even the Beatles didn't last forever.
But like you said, it's still around and picked up. I really didn't get into big band too much until I started doing my TV show, going after some songs that were part of, you know, shows and stuff that you could use. And I really started enjoying it at that point. You know, I always enjoyed, you know, listening to Fred McGee and Molly. I always enjoyed Billy Mills and the Kingsmen and, you know, the different groups that were on there. You know, Jimmy Durante, you had Peggy Lee, who was a longtime singer for him there. And, of course, Eddie Cantor, you had Diana Shore, You know, and so it's very easy to get caught in to all those things through the radio programs.
Yeah. My exposure came a little earlier. I was at the Marriott for about a year, and I had stumbled onto these. I think I mentioned this to you not too long ago, these Reader's Digest collections.
Yeah.
They were like in mint condition. Somebody played them once and put them away. And I got a hold of them, two big, huge collections of these big band songs. And, I mean, it's great classic stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some less known than others, but I'm sure they were big in their day. Less known to me for what little my education was. But I learned a lot. Playing there, we had a big band night at the Marriott, and I got to use those albums quite extensively. I was still spinning platters at the time. I was one of the last ones to give up on vinyl, and now it's coming back.
Yeah, if you want to pay $30 for an album.
Yeah, I think you got to be a real audiophile for that. I never over-focused on it. You know, when you're in a nightclub and you're playing stuff loud, how good does it have to be? As long as it's not horrible.
Well, even when you hear it, you know, and they were saying, oh, you can't beat the sound of vinyl. It says, well, yeah, you can. You know, if it's mastered right onto the CD, using the original master tapes instead of just it's very hard to distinguish. You put it on a Bose, and you're not going to, you know, the vinyl can't compare to that, you know?
Yeah. Oh, God.
So it's a matter of taste and what I call, like they call, music snobs.
Dave, I still have a working Bose alarm clock that I bought my wife for her, or I should say, still have, that I bought for our first anniversary, I think. So it's about 32 years old, Bose radio, and it still sounds incredible.
My wife downstairs has a Bose, and we got it at the Aurora Markets, and because they had a Bose outlet store there. It's a CD player as well as a radio. And it's unbelievable, the sound you get out of that. I mean, Paul Harvey was right on that too, you know?
Yeah, he was.
You know, it's just unbelievable. So, you know, the people are just snobbish about it at times, you know, and it doesn't hurt anybody, but that doesn't prove anything either when you things like that. So, you know, it just, it's nonsense, and that kind of argument. You enjoy the music you can enjoy. Enjoy it, don't you?
Yeah. You like what you like. Everybody, and that's maybe one of the good things, that there's so many different styles and types of music that everybody has their own thing that they are connected to or relate to or enjoy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Tomorrow's our last show in March. And then it's on to April and Easter.
I'm the Easter Bunny.
That'll be fun.
Yes, it will
be. Easter Bunny.
Easter Bunny.
I think maybe I better steer away from the chocolate, though. Damn it. I'll be napping through some shows here.
Yeah. What happens. I just, you know, it's just so crazy because with my connections lately, you know, I don't know whether I'm on or you're not on or Blog Talk is off or whatever the case is. It's just crazy.
Yeah, I had no idea you even logged out. I was in this absolute trance, seated bolt upright, but just in the twilight zone. I don't know.
Another journey into the twilight zone.
Falling apart, man. Fading out of this existence and into another.
Yeah. We're getting there, buddy. We're getting there.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well. It's a fun ride. Well,
yeah.
Someone fuzzy is done.
You've been up since 2, so I think it's time for us to bring in the one and only Mr. James Durant to wrap things up here for tonight.
Ah, yes, Mr. Durant, if you will.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
It's time to say good night. Good night.
Good
night.
Good night.
What more to say but good night?
We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Aribo, up we the same, and it could think it do.
Good night. Good night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.